How's this? That's better. Okay, so my name is Phoebe Gose. I am the MSTEP Assessment Administration and Reporting Consultant at the Michigan Department of Education. So thanks for joining us here, and I'd like to also thank the UP for joining us. The first thing I'd like to do is kind of get an idea of who we have in the room. So just kind of by a show of hands, who do we have here who are ISD level assessment folks? Maybe an assessment coordinator? How about district level assessment coordinators? Okay, and building level assessment coordinators? So do we have administrators in the room, like principals or superintendents? Okay, all right, great, thanks. So the first thing I'm gonna go through is I'm gonna go through a number of slides telling you about what's new. And this is really where I want to spend the bulk of my time today, talking about updates to the assessment. So the first thing to mention is social studies is now a one-part test for all grades. This was a really big and difficult decision for us to make at the department because we have concerns about how long kids sit in testing all in one session. And the reason that we've been hesitant to do this in the past is because there's been some concern that in the field there is the assumption that if a test is one part, that means it needs to happen all in one test session. And that's not the case. In an online test, you can take breaks at times that you think is reasonable for your students. And so this year in the test administration manual that's out on the website, you'll see that we have MDE recommendations for the amount of time that students should be spending testing. So social studies is now a one-part test. That does not mean that kids need to sit and test from beginning to end on that test. Science is operational this year. There are two parts for grades 5 and 8, and one part for grade 11. This is probably the most exciting update. Well, one other thing is exciting, but this is pretty exciting. So how many of you are familiar with our important dates documents? We always have them as PDFs, and we put one out, a different one out for every assessment program. A problem with that is most folks are not only working in one assessment program. So you're looking at the MyAccess important dates. And you're looking at the MSTEP important dates, and a lot of that repeats. And so what we're trying to resolve that here. I put the QR code because I thought I was being cool and techie, but I'm not. That goes to an Excel spreadsheet, so I don't know how helpful it is to look at an Excel spreadsheet on your phone, but you're welcome to. So if you go to the MSTEP webpage, you can find this file right here. It will stay in what's new. If I have my druthers, it will stay there for the entire assessment program. But if it doesn't and you are looking for this later, it'll be in current assessment administration as well. So I'm going to show you this to kind of give you an idea. So you'll see in this first column here, this is all of the assessment programs. We have WIDA, WIDA Access, MSTEP, SAT, PSAT 8-9 for grade 8 dates, and PSAT 8-9 for grade 9 dates, and PSAT 10 dates. So you can just go in here, and you can filter according to which assessment that you're interested in after you click Enable Editing. There. So now you can click, and of course, everyone here is only interested in MSTEP. And this gives you all of your MSTEP dates. Now, maybe your school doesn't have any students who are testing paper pencil, and so you'll want to keep both selected because that'll be dates that apply to online testing too. So you can deselect paper pencil. And maybe this is later in the test window and you're looking for dates that pertain to grades 3, 4, 6, and 7. So you can also filter on testing window. So again, you'll want to keep all grades, but you can get rid of the 5, 8, and 11 dates and filter. And so now you're starting to get a much more manageable list, right, when you're looking for something specifically. We also tried as we went through, and I'm going to go through here and get rid of all my filters. Well, that's neither here nor there. So you can also go through. What we tried to do is name all of these tasks that are similar, the same thing in this drop-down, which surprisingly was a huge task. You'd look at MyAccess and there would be a slightly different word in each assessment program for what these things meant. So we went through and kind of cleaned all of that stuff up so that you can also filter by task if you're looking for all of the off-site testing tasks for dates for all of the programs. You can filter there too. So this is a really important tool that we're excited to be able to offer this year. So please be sure to go out and take a look. If you have opinions about it, things that you like, things that you want to see added next year, please send us an email. You'll see our email at the end, but of course it's mde-oeaa@michigan.gov. And be sure to tell us, because that's how we decide updates. That update was made specifically because folks said that it was a challenge that they had. The next, arguably most exciting thing that we have that's an update is TTS for directions only. This, again, comes from feedback from the field, and just so that you're aware, UP included, we do go out to buildings every year, to buildings who invite us, so that we can observe and see what test administration looks like in your building to help give us ideas about ways that we can improve testing. So this is not a part of those compliance visits. Those also happen, and those aren't always voluntary. This is a voluntary thing. I will come out, some other folks from the assessment office, and we'll sit down and talk to you and say, hey, what's working well for you? How can we improve this? And that's where these updates come from. And that's what we got here. So TTS for directions only. This is not something that you need to assign in the DRC Insight portal. This is going to be available on every test direction screen. Because that's going to be available on every test direction screen, different than in the past, every test is going to have the audio check screen. In the past, only tests that had TTS assigned or the ELA tests because it had listening had the audio check screen. That's no longer the case. They all do. So the way that it'll work is everyone will go through the first few screens together, getting students logged in with their test tickets and going through the welcome screen and the test selection screen. And then at that point, the test administrator will instruct students, if you're choosing to use TTS for directions, to select play, which will be on their screen, just the same way that it looks for TTS as a designated support. And the students will be able to listen to those read aloud as TTS. So it'll take them through, it'll read through the directions, it'll tell the student to select next, and the student will select next, and it'll automatically read the next page all the way through till begin the test. So this is not mandatory, it's an option. And it's a decision that needs to be made at the building or district level, depending on how your organization is set up. So be sure when you're doing your training with test administrators that you tell them how they should administer the test, with or without this. So the test directions, because of this difference, the test directions have different sections in them now. So there's still test directions by grade and by test mode. So each grade has two directions books, one for paper, pencil, and one for online. And it will take them through the beginning screens, and then it says, if you are using TTS for directions, do this. If you are not using TTS for directions, do this. Obviously, the part where if you're not using it is much longer because you go through all the direction screens, whereas the TTS with directions just ends after the audio selection screen. And then this is just reiterating. These are the screens that you do together, and then after that, if you're choosing to use TTS for directions, the test administrator is basically finished and the kids go on and listen themselves. There is a potential problem with this, and so we're making sure everyone knows, and when you go back, be sure everyone in your area is aware of this. If you're choosing not to use TTS for directions, there still is going to be an audio check screen. And so that means if you have kids who are taking math, science, or social studies and who don't have TTS as a designated support or accommodation, then the only way that you can get past the audio check screen is to click the sound is working button, and then they have to verify that the sound is working. So if you have a computer where the volume is turned on and there's no headphones, then that's going to play into the classroom. Then potentially you could hear all of these different devices say the sound is working. It's probably not an end of the world disruption, but it is something to prepare for. Ideally, you would have those computers muted ahead of time. Another thing that comes up with this is it's common to have some kids who are using TTS as a designated support or accommodation and some who are not. So if you are administering without TTS for directions and you're in that situation where some kids are using TTS for designated support and some are not, then the kids who are using it as a designated support need to verify that their audio is working. And so there's directions included for test administrators in the test directions so that they can read in case they do have some kids who are using it as a designated support, and also some for if they're not using it as a designated support. So it's going to be really important, especially this first year that we do this, the test administrators and all of you read through those test directions so that you know all the possible things that could happen and how they should respond to those things. So along with the test directions, again, this is from feedback from the field, and if you'd like to join us, to have us come out to your building to give us some feedback so that I could be highlighting your idea next year, please let us know. We do a number of those every year. But this is the test administrator's directions and manual. It used to be that we would tell test administrators that there was a section in the TAM that they needed to read and also read through the entire test directions book before testing. And that just isn't really a viable thing to ask of folks to read certain sections of a long document like that. And so what we did was we took all of the pieces out of the TAM the test administrators need to know, and we put it into the test directions. So the first 15 pages or so of the test directions is really like a mini manual for test administrators. So they should go through that and read all of those pieces first, and then they also need to read the directions that, for the tests that they'll be administering. The test administration training toolkit we have been working on for like almost a year now, and now we have two things out that are available, and they're both for MSTEP. The idea for this is that we're going to work to continue to build more and more resources, and if you have ideas for resources that you would like to see in this, please let us know. The idea here is that this is for a building or district assessment coordinator who is responsible for training your test administrators to administer the test. Right now we have two things available. Both of them are for MSTEP. Later on, these same things are going to come available for MyAccess and MME and WIDA, and very soon those are going to become available, but they're still in the final stages of production. The first is the checklist. So this checklist, when you look at it, is something that you would hand to a test administrator, and it says, I know what I'm supposed to do with test tickets. I know how I'm supposed to manage my test directions or my test rosters. I know who's going to have accommodations. So it's all of the different things and pieces of information that a test administrator needs to know in order to administer the assessment. Building or district coordinators can use this as a way to plan your training. Right? You know, these are all the things that a test administrator needs to know, so I can use this to plan what my training is going to look like. And this is, it's fully customizable, it's a template, it says at the top that it's a template. And the idea here is we have a space where you can fill in, there's a section that says people to know, so you can fill in the information about your building principal and how to contact them, and they're building a district assessment coordinators and technology people. So it's all customizable. The idea is that you keep the parts that are uniform among everyone, and then you add your specific information in there. And the same is true for the PowerPoint template. Again, the PowerPoint template is something that you would use when you're training test administrators. You would add your district information and your district logo and all of those kinds of things, and you make modifications throughout, specifically your cell phone policy, test schedule, how you're handling secure materials. Also, another big topic is always how you're going to make sure that test administrators are aware of what accommodations and supports are happening in their test sessions and where they should find materials. So again, it's all fully customizable for you. It's available right now for MSTEP, but soon it's going to be available for all of the other assessments as well. And any questions so far? If you have questions, feel free to just pop in. So this is also new, and that QR code might be a little more helpful, although you can just go to the MSTEP webpage. Michigan.gov/MSTEP to see all of the things that I'll share with you. So new this year is a required test security training. For district and building assessment coordinators, they're required to complete the test security modules, you can find them here, and also to read the assessment integrity guide. We are updating the assessment integrity guide each November now, so that is updated for this year. Test administrators are required to do one or the other, either read the AIG or complete the modules. Now, a reason to complete the modules is down here. If you completed those modules last year in spring of 19, or maybe you participated in the early literacy assessment and you did that just a few weeks ago for the winter administration, if you've done it in spring of 19 or any time since then you can take the refresher course. It's again a test security module, but it's much shorter, more compressed, and it focuses on updates instead of the complete training. And this is a very important reminder. The test security training does not replace test administration training. Those are two different things. You have a question? So for the UP, the question is, how long do the modules take for the test administrators? And so there's four different modules, and they should take between 15 minutes and a half an hour for each one. There are a couple that are longer than others. So it's going to kind of depend, because they can have them read aloud, and you can do it as a whole group, or you can have them all do it individually. So there's a lot of variability in there. Any other questions? Yes. No, that's good. Okay. So the question is, does text-to-speech for directions only force the kids to listen to the whole thing? And no, it doesn't have that functionality. You're talking about like on the CAT, where you would have to get to a certain point before you can click next. No, they could still click next on those screens. Another question? Yeah, so the question is, do the modules have a certificate of completion? And they do. And I believe that there's a quiz at the end, and you get that included on. In order to get that certificate, you have to go through that quiz. Anything else? We also have some updates with incident reporting this year. How many of you have previously been responsible for doing incident reporting and monitoring, testing irregularities? So we have this new requirement. I'm going to talk about the reasons for that in a second. But testing irregularities need to be submitted within 2 school days of either the incident occurring or of you being notified of that. And so because of this new requirement, in the past we've always said that only district assessment coordinators should be submitting incident reports. Now, if anyone who has secure login to the secure site is okay to submit those incident reports, and you can rest assured, if you are listed in the EEM as a district assessment coordinator, you will be copied on any communication that comes from the secure site or us. So if you do allow some other folks to submit incident reports, you will be notified as it happens that those are happening. So you'll still be in the loop with everything. But that's just to make this more feasible. We've run into some issues in the past where folks were gathering all the documentation and trying to do what they needed to do in order to get stuff submitted. And so by the time they finally submitted it and we were made aware of it, it was too late to resolve the issue. And so what we want to do is we want to make sure we're being notified of the issue. And then we can go back and deal with all the paperwork stuff that has to happen after that. But just to be sure that we are aware of what's going on, and we're able to do it in a timely manner to resolve it so that you can get your kids testing. Our most common incident report that we get is an issue with supports or accommodations. And most typically, that involves a student who should have had something assigned through Insight that was not assigned. And I will just take a moment to remind you, because I think this might be a big reason that happens. If you're assigning designated supports or accommodations in the Insight portal, you have to assign those before you print test tickets. If you print test tickets and then assign a support or accommodation, it will not be available on the student's test. So be sure that you're aware of that, and anyone who's printing any test tickets is aware of that. So what is happening this year that's different in regard to the supports and accommodations is if this support is a designated support. And what that means is is a designated support for that student, because sometimes TTS is a designated support for MSTEP, but it's really an accommodation that's listed in the student's IEP, right? That can happen, I think, frequently. So if the student is using it only as a designated support, then you'll need to submit your incident report within 2 days, but then you must submit a signed form from your parent indicating the reason for the retest and parent permission to retest. Have any of you been familiar with those forms that we created in prior years? We will continue to use those same forms, and so you'll be able to find a link to those forms at the top of the incident reporting tool, again, like what we've done before in the secure site. But in addition to that, if it's a designated support, then we're going to need a signed form from whomever is your educator that's responsible for day-to-day instruction for that student, stating and affirming that that student receives that designated support every day for instructional use in the classroom. If that it's being offered as an accommodation, for example, you have a student who is having text-to-speech for social studies because that's an accommodation listed in their IEP, then it's an accommodation, even though for the test it's technically a designated support. So if that's the situation, we still need this to submit the signed form from the parent and also the appropriate page from the IEP or Section 504 plan that shows that that's an accommodation. Something different also here. If you're not able to get this parent permission, then we need to invalidate that test because it's not going to be a valid test score, right? If you have a student whose IEP says they're supposed to have text-to-speech and they don't, then that's not going to result in valid information. Any questions about these two things? So again, this is based on feedback from the field. We have these three situations that come up. A student becomes ill and goes home on that day. A student spends less than 15 minutes total in the test. And we know that means clicking through, right? Or a student does not take a prescribed medication on the day of the test. Those are three different situations. Really, they're not controllable by you. Number two, arguably, is controllable by the student. So in those situations, we're not getting a valid test score, right? That score that we're getting is not good data. And so if that happens, then an incident report must be submitted by 11:59 p.m. that night. Then that test can be regenerated if it's submitted in time. Now, in order for that to be regenerated, we need, again, documentation of parent permission. We never retest a student completely unless we have parent permission. Keep your hand. Let me know before I move from this slide. Also, the other other thing that we need is documentation of verification of the incident, and that can just be a staff statement. So the parameters for number one, student becomes ill and goes home on test day. That is a student who started the test today, got sick today, and their parent picked them up today, so that will be you can document that incident with your attendance records. Then that can be regenerated. If the student didn't go home sick that day, then it's not going to work. I know I've got a few questions. We're going to answer all these questions before I move on from the slide, but I just want to say two and three first. Student spends less than 15 minutes total in test. The only way that DRC is able to monitor test time is from the time that the student clicks begin test after they've listened to test directions until the time that they click submit. So there's not a way. So you might have a situation where a student logs into a test today, spends 5 minutes testing, and logs out, and then tomorrow they spend 2 minutes testing. Well, the way that that's going to look to us is that they spent 24 hours plus 7 minutes testing. And there's no way to change that. So this is for a situation where today the student started the test and today the student submitted the test within less than 15 minutes. And then student does not take prescribed medication on the day of the test. You just need documentation from the parent that that occurred. Okay, so let's do some questions. I'll start back here. So the question is, does less than five questions go away for the unlocking procedure? Yes, so less than five questions, you can still, yes, that So there's two things here. You can still call DRC to have that unlocked if they answered fewer than 5 questions and then submitted the test, and also they spent less than 15 minutes, then yes. But if they spent 20 minutes on those 5 questions, then that's going to count. Another question. Oh, that just means they go home. It doesn't, as long as you have, like it should be reflected in your attendance. No, and that's a good point I meant to point out. All you need to do is submit the incident report. Say, hey, this happened today, and then tomorrow we can get the documentation, because there's not going to be, it's going to be difficult in any of these, right, to get parent permission on the day of. So just submit the incident report without the documentation. And then we'll send it back and say, hey, upload the documentation. Another question? Any test that is invalidated is counted as not tested, and that does hurt your participation. But not every test the parent doesn't give permission to retest would necessarily be invalidated. And that's going to depend very specifically on the situation. Well, that for the student, this one you're going to need attendance data showing that they went home sick, like whatever your attendance system is. Oh, a couple questions in the front here. That's ideal. That's what we would like them to do, but that's not a. So the specific instances that we've repeatedly heard that this is addressing is some students are not comfortable telling their teacher in the middle of a test because we've told them that this is important and to do your best work and make sure you get sleep last night and eat some breakfast today. So some kids aren't really comfortable saying, hey, I'm sick, and so they'll just keep going and try to do that. And so when that happens, again, submit that day and then get documentation later. Another question? Correct. Yeah. So that question for the UP was the only way that it's possible to submit before you've gone through all the items is for the fixed form test. So now that you say that is science and social studies, and of course any of the early literacy, but most of the accommodated forms of the online test are fixed form. So Stack Spanish for Math is a fixed form test, so you could do that there. Right, not text to speech. Another question? And that's okay. So the question is, how long do we have if we're not able to get this documentation that day? How long do we have to get that? And that's really going to vary based on where we are in the test window. Because students can keep testing any time within that 4-week window, and we are perfectly okay with waiting. So if it happens in the first week of the window, we're really okay waiting the next 3 weeks. Typically, we do not like to regenerate any test after Wednesday of the last week of testing. So if it happens on Monday of the last week of testing, then we're going to need to see a really quick turnaround for that situation. But that's just about the end of the test window. We don't want to invalidate or regenerate something and then have them not have time to test. So that's really what that is about. Whomever is legally responsible for that student, a legal guardian or... Yes, another question? How to do this for when this happens for number 2, submit the incident report through the incident reporting tool. So you'll go in there and it's listed as a student did not complete test or lack of effort. And this information is all in the test administration manual as well. So just submit this incident report through the secure site without the final. Oh, this documentation, you mean. This we have on our end. For number 2, the student spends less than 15 minutes total in test. when a student, this is actually how we decided to cut the testing time for down to 3 hours and how we decided that happens. When a student submits a test, we can see from DRC how long they spent in that test. So we're not going to need additional documentation of verification of the incident for this situation here. Yes, yeah, still we need the parent permission. And the only way that we're going to be able to see how long they spent in that test is if it was submitted. So if you think that maybe they spent 14 minutes or 10 minutes, go ahead and submit it. And then we'll be able to look and say, hey, no, it was 17 minutes. And let you know from there. Okay? There's got to be a cutoff, and it's got to be standard, so it's the only way to do it. Any other? I know. I get it. So how many of you know already the eDirect is the DRC Insight portal now? Yep. It's the sign-in page is a lot nicer, and it looks great. But once you get in, it's basically the same organization that it was before. The one thing that you need to notice is for test administrators to be able to access the materials that they do, like the student tutorials or things like that, this word here, right here, is the place where they go. So it's a little harder to find that spot. Of course, your login information for all of you should have a secure access. That's over here. But test administrators without a secure login should click here in that little bullet point. So you'll want to include this when you modify the template, PowerPoint template, so that you can show them. Offsite testing continues to be available. How many of us use offsite testing? Reminder, offsite testing is available, and it's most commonly used for a building-wide situation, like an online school, things like that. But also, it's available for students who receive homebound services. If you have a student who is suspended during testing, or students who are expelled with services, you can assess those kids at an off-site location. In the past, there was a different form that was linked on the MSTEP webpage to request off-site administration, but now that's all done right within the OEAA secure site. And that window just opened up, so you can submit those. Oh, read by grade 3. Have we all heard read by grade 3? Okay, so the testing window, these are a lot of words, and when you get a chance, go ahead and read through this. You might have seen some of this because the wording comes from the memo that we put out, but the test schedule has been changed for grades 3, 4, 6, and 7 to be a week earlier. MDE is recommending that third graders are tested during that first week. The way this impacts you when you're looking at your whole building is that there's going to be 2 weeks of overlap. Typically, we've had 1 week, right, where it was the last week of 5, 8, and 11, and the first week of 3, 4, 6, and 7. Now there's going to be 2 weeks of that. And again, our recommendation is test your third graders during that first week. There's a lot that we can do to help make sure that you get a valid test score, but not if it's in that last week of testing. You really crunch down on the time there, and it can be challenging. So get those kids tested during the first week. And preliminary scale scores are going to be used when deciding who is receiving those CEPI letters. How many of you used the preliminary reports in the past? So the preliminary reports are accessed through the secure site. You all use dynamic score reporting, yes? So they're accessed in the same place. During testing, preliminary reports are the only thing that's available. And it really looks like a student roster report, basically, if you haven't seen them before. And it gives you, it's just a met, not met benchmark, so it tells you the student met the cut, the proficiency cut, or they didn't. So what we're going to do this year is we're going to add a read by grade 3 indicator to the grade 3 ELA preliminary report, and it's going to tell you which of these three categories that they fall into: the meets requirements, needs support, or eligible for retention. So the students receiving the letters will be students who are eligible for retention. This is how you know who's getting those letters before they get them. There's no other way for you to know who's going to get those letters unless you go to the preliminary report and look in here to see who's got this read by grade 3 indicator. Yes, question? It's open for all of them. But we're recommending the third graders test during the first week of that window because the letters from CEPI are going home on a rolling basis. So basically, the earlier you test, the earlier you'll have your information. That's the recommendation, but it's open for everybody. So again, we say that you can view student preliminary scores within 48 hours of the student submitting the test. The truth is that you can most of the time view that the next day if the student clicked submit, because we'd re-update every day. So most of the time you'll see that the next day, but if you don't, definitely within 48 hours. So we're strongly suggesting that you monitor those. Another question? Yeah, the question is that going to be available as a downloadable data file? That conversation is in the works. Right now, we don't have that available, but we've heard that request quite a bit, and I think that there's a lot of validity to that request, especially for a larger district. And so that is something that we're taking back and going to see if there's a way that we can implement it. Possibly, you know, my thought is in the CSV files like we do in the dynamic score reporting. So be sure that you're watching the spotlight because we definitely want to, if it's possible. Another question? They've got groups, and I think that it's like I don't remember if it was every week or every 2 weeks, but basically, because May 5th is going to be kind of the end of the group, but they're going to be doing this over time, so when you test earlier. And that's why you need the preliminary reports, because that's how... Yeah, I know what you're saying. It won't come out any earlier than May 5th. Right. So that is a CEPI thing. Schools are being the way that schools are being notified is through their preliminary reports. There's, you know, this is going to be a really challenging piece of legislation because for example, paper pencil testers are not included in preliminary score reports at all because we don't have that data available. So they're going to be towards the end of the ones who are reported. And so when you think about that from across the state, we have less than 1% of students testing paper pencil, and when you look at that for third grade only, it's an even smaller number. But we still have these kind of one-off situations that we're going to have to address on a case-by-case basis. Yes. So the question is, if the student is taking MyAccess, do they need to be doing that? So the MyAccess test window is the entire time. So no, the answer is no, because students who are taking MyAccess also don't have this score, because their score is completely a separate piece. Right. They don't, because they don't have the score. Because MyAccess doesn't report scales. A question in the back? Yes. The question, UP, was are they only available for public, or are they only coming for public schools? And the answer is yes. Another question here and then here? Yep, they are coming from CEPI as certified mail. So your parents have to be home to get them, or drive down to the post office to get them. That is true. So we'll go here and then over here. Question is, are they only getting one for retention, or are they also getting them for need support? Only retention. So need support is basically, hey school, you should offer this kid support. Parents will not be notified of that. Another question was over here. So,
probably not the right address, and so
right. Mm-hmm. So the question is, how is the school going to know who's actually received the letter? And then some concerns about moving and whether CEPI has the correct address. So that's going to happen through the United States Postal Service and not anything to do with CEPI or MDE. So we don't have a way to know or verify who has or has not received the letter or signed off on having received the letter. Another question here, and then we'll go there. So the question is, how do we know when we have new students come in or students changing schools who has or has not received that letter? And you're thinking like in the fall when we're enrolling students. Right, they won't. And they won't, and that's true, they're not going to. And the only way that you're able to get access to student information because of FERPA is once they've actually enrolled. And then you're able to see them in SecureSite. There's not a way to... Well, make sure that you go into MSDS and sign them up in your school so you get it before December. But yes, that decision will need to be made. And you can let your parents know up front, hey, we're not able to see right now if you got this letter, but we're going to be able to see. And if we do see, then this is what we'll have to do. And then in the back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It does to anyone who counts as a public school student. So you have so this includes third graders. It's going to go to whomever is listed through MSDS as their legal guardian and that address. Then it's going to. Then that's how it should be inputted into MSDS, and it'll go to that address as well. I'm just a messenger here, guys. Right. Yeah. Okay. So now we're going to talk about before testing. Oh yay, SecureSite, this is a very important site. If you don't already have login information, be sure that you do, so that you can do all of these different and important things. Right now, the big thing we have going on is pre-identification and also setting up test sessions. Of course, every time I listen to Tina give a presentation, she tells me about how great everyone knows that setting up test sessions is in the SecureSite versus the DRC Insight portal. I don't have personal experience, but I believe her. So be sure that you get those test sessions set up. It needs to be done by February 24th. Also, that's where you're going to go for barcode labels if you're testing anyone, paper, pencil, and material orders. Initial material orders are sent out, and we're going to talk about those based on your pre-ID count. And we have a lot of different formulas we use for what we send to who. And those formulas are based on who you've pre-identified for testing and to what test mode, paper, pencil, or online. So again, I hope all of you are familiar with the SecureSite training link here. If not, it's a great place for you to go to get training on anything that has to do with the SecureSite. There is a short step-by-step document for every task that exists in there. You can get information about setting up test sessions or pre-identification or how to do your off-site test request. Anything that there is to do in the SecureSite has a document in there. So if you have not been to this website, please go there and just kind of take a look. It's a good place if you're, the thing with assessment is, especially with a lot of these tasks, it's something that you do once a year. And you do a lot of other things for the rest of the year. And so you can kind of forget exactly where everything is. So go in here, and it'll just refresh your memory. You can look in there, and again, step-by-step instructions for anything that there is to do in the secure site. I highly recommend that site. So your pre-ID was automatically done, I think it was January 8th this year, or January 6th, but it was based on your fall count data, right? So fall MSGS general collection, so that was your student count day that happened. Anyone who has enrolled or left your building or district since that time, you will need to go in and input that information into the secure site so that your lists are correct. And of course, depending on what you're doing, you can do that through one at a time through student search or through pre-ID file upload or the copy function from MSDS, as long as MSDS is complete and up to date. Be sure that it's complete and up to date prior to going in and using that function. And again, there are documents for each one of those on the Secure Site training page. So here is the date, February 24th. 2020, students can be assigned to test sessions in the OEAA secure site. This is a date, actually, that I'm remembering that I typically, it's, you know, we have so many dates you don't remember. But this year I remember because that's the day my son's turning 26. if you have students who come into your building after February 24th, then you pre-ID them still, but then in order to assign them to a test session, you go into the Insight portal. So you have a student enrolls on February 25th. You'll need to go in and pre-ID them. They will automatically be pulled over to the DRC Insight portal, and then you need to go in and assign them to test sessions. And a note about that, when we are looking at our fall data as our automatic pre-ID, you can end up with students who are listed in your pre-ID but who are no longer in your school, or you might go through and pre-ID kids between now and April and then have them leave before then and then have them. So what can happen and does happen is you end up with these students who are assigned to test sessions who should not be testing. Another way this happens is when we're pre-IDing to MyAccess and we do not remove the student from MSTEP, and then they get pulled over into DRC Insight portal, and then what happens is we have kids who double test because you print out a test ticket, and you hand your test tickets to your test administrator and say, hey, these are the kids who need to test. And you have a student who's supposed to take MyAccess in that content area who wasn't removed from the test session, so when you printed your test tickets, they were included. And of course we know everyone has to test, so if I have a test ticket, I'm going to test these kids. And so then they end up taking, and we have situations where a student sits in their classroom with their special education teachers and takes MyAccess, and they leave there, and then they go and take the MSTEP. And we want to avoid that. So a hint that we have for you, when you end up with kids who shouldn't be testing, who are in the DRC Insight portal and you're not able to remove them, a number of schools have started up setting test sessions and just called it not tested students. And so you put all those kids into that test session as a way to have a place to put them, and that way you don't print test tickets for them. Just an idea, because it's just something that's going to happen. So the DRC Insight portal is DRC's application. Again, it's just renamed this year, looks a lot the same. We're going to do the same things, the online test sessions, assign your designated supports and accommodations, print and manage all of your test tickets, and monitor testing status. And a question? You can, yeah, the question is, can you still set them up in DRC Insight portal? Yes. It doesn't matter to us. I'm told it's easier to do through the secure site. I haven't had to do it myself that way, either way at all, so. Well, there you go. Well, then you're good. No, it doesn't matter to us at all. So again, access to the Insight portal is granted through the OEAA secure site, and a reminder, test administrators are able to access everything that we suggest that they access without a secure login. That includes the test directions, although those are also available on the MSTEP page, the tutorials, everything they need. They don't need a login. And I have another question. C- question is, how long does it take once they're pre-ID'd to pull over to DRC? They do a couple of pulls a day, but definitely within 24 hours you'll see them in DRC Insight Portal, and sometimes sooner. Once a student is in the Insight Portal, there's no way to get them out. So the question for that, for the UP, was if you have a student who's withdrawn, are they still going to stay there? And there's no way to remove a student from the Insight Portal. You can take them out. You should take them out of the test session and then put them into the not testing session so that you've got a place for them. So the question is, are you still responsible for them? So the account for accountability calculations and who's expected to test, that's based on your MSDS count data. So it's not based on who's pre-ID'd or who's in the Insight Portal. That's exclusively based on your MSDS data and who is their PEPE district, so their school. If you exit them from MSDS, then they're exited. Even if because there are kids who leave and don't enroll, and maybe they go to homeschool or something. So if they're exited from you, then you're good. But it's all MSDS for accountability. Yes. Oh, yeah. So the question is about having a number of kids who are coming in and out of the district and trying to have materials ahead of time, right? Oh, because of the time situations, you mean, when you have it. So the additional material order window, you can order paper, pencil, materials during that time, but there is just simply because of the logistics of it. Because when you order your materials, they're not coming from Lansing, they're coming from North Carolina. So getting them there, just there's some logistical situations there. So even if it's an accommodated piece. Keep calling us when that happens so that we're notified. Again, accountability is only from MSDS, so if they were enrolled and you aren't able to get the materials, they're still going to be there. But do submit that during the answer documents received window, because when we start to see similar situations happening, then we can take a look at how we can differently resolve those, right? So you're probably not going to get the exemption if you submit it that you didn't have materials in time, but if you submit that and other districts who are having the same situation continue to submit this, then from policy perspective, they're going to have to take a look at that and make decisions. So submit it even if you think you're not going to get it, so that we know that it's happening. So the Insight Portal will be available beginning March 6th. Again, your students who are pre-ID'd by February 24 will be copied in. You might do work between February 24 and March 6th and pre-ID some students. They won't show up right away on March 6th. It'll take a day or so for all of those kids that you worked on after February 24 and before March 6th to appear. But by March 7, everyone should be available in the DRC Insight Portal. And those kids pre-ID'd after February 24 will have to be added directly in the DRC Insight Portal, not eDirect anymore. Here I want to plug the training that is available for assessment coordinators in the DRC Insight Portal. There's information, and many of these are available also for test administrators, because what I'm pointing out here is how to access the OTTs. This mini module talks to you about how to assign and mass assign student supports and accommodations, how to create test sessions. So when you are in there and you search mini modules, all of these will come up. Please take a look if you're having any issues. Sometimes listening to a mini module that lasts a minute or two is quicker than going through the entire user guide. Although if that's exciting reading for you, that's fine too. But it will give you all the information that you need to have. Please join us on March 3rd. We're going to do an online district and building assessment coordinator training with DRC. That is led by DRC, but all of us from the assessment office will also be there. I will be there and Kate Cermak will be there to answer questions. If you're not available at this time, then the recording will be available the next day for you to listen to at your convenience. And I'm highlighting this here because it's MSTEP, but during that week, there's another one for My Access and also another one for Early Literacy. So if you're administering either of those, watch the spotlight for those dates because those are also during the same week. So in the spotlight, you will get a link to go to the WebEx, which is where that is. So student preparation, it's really important, especially your third graders, that you walk them through the tutorials, Launch Insight, and you can see the tutorials on the bottom. And I also showed you can access those through the DRC Insight portal. You'll click this tab up here to do that. But you want to make sure this is what we recommend is that teachers show the tutorials to students. And what those tutorials are is there are a number of them. They're 1 or 2 minutes long. Shows them how to use the calculator, how to use the graphing tool, how to use all these different tools that are in there. There's a bunch of them, one for each tool. So make sure that kids have done that. And once they've done that, teachers should model the OTTs, and then students should have an opportunity to practice using the OTTs on the device they will be tested on. The items that are on the OTTs are not chosen for content. They don't represent the range of content that will be assessed. They're chosen based on the tools. They want to make sure that all of the students have access and practice with the tools that they will use. New this year, we have some OTTs and some tutorials for accommodated versions of the test so that students who are using VSL, for example, will be able to kind of look at that and see what that's going to be like, or Stack Spanish, or those different types of supports and accommodations. So please be looking for those as well. Those are new this year. And I did my spiel a little bit early, but this is your image of what it looks like. This is a student's voice. It's a child voice actor who reads these so that it's a little more relatable for the kids, we hope. Shows them how to sign in, pause and exit, just really basic things. Again, prior to testing, especially for kids who have not done this before. Test schedules continue to be required and continue to be required to be maintained for 3 years. This isn't new this year. And these are all of the things that it must include. I don't anticipate that you're going to memorize this from this conference. That information is available in the Assessment Integrity Guide. The Assessment Integrity Guide also has an appendix that has a sample test schedule that you can choose to use. What your test schedules look like is up to you, but it does need to include this information here. So these are our test session time estimates. Again, these are estimates, and I'm certain that by now you've heard us say probably somewhere that this does not include time to pass out test tickets or redirections or anything else. This is just from the time the students click begin the test until they submit the test. Again, they are estimates of timings. What's new is Science Part 1 and Science Part 2, 45 minutes each, and then Social Studies, because it's a one-part test, 60 minutes. This is grade 8. Oh, and the other reminder that MSTEP is not a timed test, so be sure that kids are having a sufficient amount of time to complete their test. But that is not true for SAT and College Board, so be sure that you're following College Board requirements when you're administering College Board tests. So again, Science Part 1 and Part 2, 45 minutes, and then Social Studies, 60 minutes. Science is one part in grade 11. So initial material orders, how are we doing for time? again, are based on your pre-ID count, so be sure that you're doing that. Also, you can select your delivery date for those. It started because sometimes there are schools who are on spring break at different times, and so it was more convenient to do that. Just choose the one. There's a default date, and if that default date doesn't work for you, you can select the other date. We get this question every year, so I've added it to the TAM, and that is, if I'm an online school, what materials are going to be included in my online material orders? So everybody, every school receives security compliance forms at a rate of 1 per 20 of your pre-ID students. Also, you'll receive an entire return kit, air bills, instructions for return, scorable labels, and special handling envelopes, and then the test administrator's directions and manuals, again, at a rate of 1 per 20 by test mode, because there's a different document for online and paper pencil. So then, in addition to this, an online school that has 6th or 7th grade students pre-ID'd will get one piece of graph paper per student in grade 6 or 7. And that's everything that a school will receive who's testing online only with no students testing paper pencil. Question? If you test completely online, do you need to return everything? No. Your secure materials are going to be your test tickets and test rosters, and those are securely destroyed. You get the return kit in case you need to have it, but if you don't have anything to return, no, you don't have to. If you're a paper pencil school or you have any students who are pre-ID'd for paper pencil testing, you'll receive all of these things plus blank labels for you to print, like from the secure site if you need to print more. Listening scripts and CDs for ELA, of course your test booklets and answer documents, and then your pre-ID labels. If you're testing online and you have a couple of kids who are pre-ID'd for paper pencil testing, you're going to get everything. Again, at a rate of 1 per 20 based on pre-ID, 1 per student based on your pre-ID. This request is coming from our test security specialist. Please be sure, I'll stop and do a question and then we'll do this. A question over here. For the test administration manual, so that's available only online, but the test administrator's directions and manual, you get 1 per 20, and if you need more, they're available online on the MSTEP webpage. The TAM? The directions and manual? So if 1 per 20 isn't a formula that works for your school, please send Tina an email, because we make decisions about what those formulas are every year. So for this year, it's too late to change that. But if you need it to be 1 per 10 or 1 per 15, let us know, because we review that it's usually in December or January, but if you send us an email to let us know that's not working for you, then we can make changes to what that formula is. All grades are available right now for printing, but depending on... Okay, another question over here. So the question is that you're ordering paper pencil materials, but you only test online, and those are just as backup. That's because you don't have any students who are pre-ID'd to paper pencil testing. Correct. So if you're testing all online with no students pre-ID'd to paper pencil, but you're ordering paper pencil materials just in case something comes up, then the only way to have test administrator's directions and manual sent to your school is to pre-ID, or you can print them from the MSTEP webpage, and they're all available now. So the note from our test security specialist, please inventory your materials when you receive them. All of your materials come with a packing list that includes what they believe is in your list. At the end of testing, Jessica goes through and they review all of the secure materials to ensure that all the secure materials that went out are returned. And if there's any kinds of discrepancies, then they will send letters to you and to your district and building administrators. And they are going to hold you responsible for anything that was on that packing list. A lot of times she'll get responses of, oh, well, we never received that. The time to say that is when you receive them, not when we're asking where they are. So be sure that you go through. Errors are made. Do an inventory of all of your secure materials. We're not looking for your test administrator's directions and manuals, books, or anything like that. It's just secure materials. Be sure that you inventory them so that you agree with what our packing list says, because that packing list is what we are expecting to receive back as far as secure materials. Supports and accommodations overview. Of course, we have universal tools for all students. Designated supports are done by decision of an educator, based on individual student need. And then accommodations are based on IEP and 504 plans. What I want to highlight here is it's important to consider students' individual needs. Some folks in our office have been doing a bit more with monitoring student supports and accommodations and how they are assigned. A reminder, so that is why we have this reminder here. You cannot assign, there aren't many situations where it's even appropriate that all students would need any certain designated support. A designated support is a decision made based on individual student need. Now, there are a couple of situations where that's just the reality, and that's okay, but just be sure that you're making that decision individually and not just blanket for a whole school. A reminder, providing students with more than what they need or know how to use can negatively impact their scores. I mean, imagine a student, and all of a sudden they have all these tools that I never have available anywhere else. They're going to play with them, and it will negatively impact their scores. But at the same time, not providing what they need can negatively impact their scores. So just be cognizant of this and take your time and be sure that you're doing, you're assigning these according to student need. And I see that we're running out of time, but I want to get through this part here with text-to-speech because it's something that is consistently an issue. Text-to-speech exists as a designated support and also as an accommodation. Text-to-speech is a designated support for ELA, math, science, and social studies. And when you assign text-to-speech as a designated support, it reads the questions and answer options. So for ELA, that doesn't really apply to math, science, and social studies because those items don't have long reading passages. But if you assign text-to-speech as a designated support for ELA, it reads the items, but not the reading passages. Text-to-speech passage is available for ELA grade 6 and 7 only as an accommodation. It's the same thing as a calculator not being allowed for grades 3, 4, 5 at all. It changes the construct of the test if you had those passages read aloud to them in grades 3, 4, and 5, and so that's why it's not available. So be sure if you're assigning TTS passage that is based on accommodation identified in their IEP or 504 plan. And also, this will be my last slide, and then you can read these afterwards, and I'm sorry that I didn't get through everything. Create a process to review which tools students are using in the classroom. Is there a match? Also, before you start testing, be sure that you meet with everyone. A lot of times, folks who know which supports and accommodations are necessary are not necessarily the people who are assigning them in the DRC Insight portal. It's important that you have good communication between you and whomever the people are who know that, so that you're assigning them according to what the students need and what's happening in the classroom, and that the people who are administering the test know that they're supposed to have this designated support or accommodation. Different schools and districts do this different ways. I know Jen yesterday was talking about a number of schools using Google Sheets and using UICs versus student names to help kind of protect identities there. And then that way you can share that with your district or building so that folks know what's supposed to happen, because there's just so much communication that is required in order to do this well and effectively. So if that's an idea for one way you can do it, you can find another way, but be sure that you have a process in place for making sure this happens. And I'm not certain that we're even allowed to end anything without reminding you to sign up for the spotlight. So if you don't already get it, please be sure that you sign up for that. If you get time, go through some of this stuff. Although there's not a lot more that's changed, we've gone through all of the updates. Thank you for your attentive listening. I appreciate it, and have a good rest of your day.